Welcome to the How Did They Do It Real Estate Podcast. Have you ever wondered how people succeed in real estate and what steps they took to get there? If so, this podcast is for you. Your hosts, Sayla and Eileen Prack, interview top experts in the real estate community to share with you their real estate journey and how they achieved massive success. Our goal is to provide you with valuable real estate resources and to help you apply it to your own real estate goal. Welcome to today's episode of the How Did They Do It Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Eileen Prack. And today we've brought on another fantastic guest for you, Victoria Garza Frazier. And she plays a pivotal role as REAP's Acquisitions and Capital Events Manager. And on the acquisition side, she interfaces with brokers, lenders, and the operations team to acquire assets, procure debt, and maximize property values. Additionally, she manages the refinances, dispositions, and REAP's underwriting team. So Victoria, welcome to the show. It's a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you, Eileen. I'm honored to be on your podcast.
So Victoria, can you share a little bit more about your background and how you got started with real estate?
Sure. So I was first introduced to real estate when I was a teenager. My parents, who founded REAP Equity, bought a 24-unit property here in San Antonio, Texas, where we're based out of. So I really got to, they managed it and they did the maintenance all themselves. So I really got to see it through their eyes, the impact that they made in creating community and investing in real estate. So from there, I worked on property as a leasing agent, and then I went off to college. I got my degree in psychology and business from Southwestern, and then got my master's in London, actually. So I got to move abroad and got that in psychology. And then I moved to Miami and I started working for another vertically integrated multifamily firm. So I did investor relations, I did marketing, I did a little bit of asset management. I kind of just did everything just to learn. And then I returned back to San Antonio, where I worked again on property for 6 months because I feel that is just so crucial for understanding the day-to-day operations. And then I joined the acquisitions team.
So Victoria, your family has been part of real estate, or they've been investing in real estate, you know, for years and years. And so for you, when you went off to college and as you were growing up, did you know that you wanted to be part of that family business? And was that the path that you were headed towards, or you wanted to find your own way first and then eventually figure out what you wanted to do as you grew older?
Sure. So I did originally want to do psychology. And I wanted to be a therapist, but growing up, my parents would always say, you know, do what you love, but invest in real estate. That is how you can gain passive income. So after I did psychology, I realized, you know, it's not for me. I really miss real estate. I think once you have that real estate bug, it just pulls you right back in. So from there, I made a decision to jump back into real estate, and I still use my psychology degrees all the time because it's a people business.
How do you feel, or how do you think that growing up in that environment has helped shape the way you think about real estate and the strategies that you see going into this business now?
Yeah, I think it's really shaped me from just an investment standpoint. So I think as a millennial, it's important to be investing, no matter if you invest in stocks or bonds. My choice is real estate. So I think getting that early on helped me just set up my future for financial freedom earlier. And I think it just lends to the knowledge that housing is crucial, that it's people are going to do two things at the end of the day. They're going to buy food and they're going to pay their rent or make sure that there is a roof over their head. So I think that's where I learned how pivotal housing is.
Do you think that because you grew up in this environment, you've been exposed to it, you understand, you know, how people purchase these larger apartment buildings, they do business and operate. Having that background, do you think that it made you feel more comfortable getting into real estate and kind of understanding it? Because I think a lot of people, if they've never been exposed to it, have a little bit of that mindset block about some challenges and some hurdles that they would have to overcome in order to get started with real estate.
Yeah. So I think it's great that you're able to go see the physical asset that you invest in. And I think that's kind of where you're able to overcome that hurdle is it's not a random stock or a bond or a REIT that you can't see. It's a real physical asset that you're investing in and a community that you're improving. So I think getting that knowledge early on and really being able to see how it works from the leasing to the assistant manager to the manager to how the CapEx works, I think it was really crucial in my investment journey as well.
So Victoria, right now you're focused primarily on the acquisition side of things. Are you still focused in the San Antonio market or the greater parts of Texas as well? And are you also looking outside of Texas?
Yeah, so right now we're focused on San Antonio, Houston, and Austin. We purchased our first deal in Austin last year, so we're really excited to break into that new market. We focus primarily on the primary markets, those three, and we do not invest outside of Texas. We really like to build economies of scale to really maximize our management company because we are vertically integrated. So I think our next steps will be building out our Austin portfolio while continuing to buy in San Antonio and Houston.
In the past year also, you guys have also been able to purchase a few acquisitions as well. How did you position yourselves in being able to win those deals, also find the deals that pencil out, especially in this market where a lot of people have kind of halted on being able to purchase new acquisitions just because they can't find those right deals or maybe the negotiations kind of fell through? But what set you guys apart that allowed you to continue growing your portfolio?
Yeah, I think we focused a lot on just looking at every single deal and really scrutinizing it. Last year was definitely interesting with the rise in interest rates. So what we did was we did a lot of agency loans, specifically Fannie Mae. They had the best loan terms. And for the product that we're buying, which is primarily 80s value add, there's a lot of incentives for Fannie Mae to give you some incredible debt terms. So that is what we focused on is deals that were able to be financed through Fannie Mae. And we also utilized rate buy downs. So that helped us also get some really great interest rates and remain positively leveraged on most of the deals we did. We also focused on loan assumption. So if we were able to get a loan assumption like we did on our first Austin deal, that is just incredible because there are people that, you know, bought 3-4 years ago that have these amazing loans that we're able to take advantage of. So that's kind of how we're able to do it. And I think like having the relationships with your brokers and lenders is crucial to always be talking to them. And I think REAP's advantage is our surety of close. So then whenever we did get under contract, there's a surety with the broker, with the seller and with our lender that we would be able to close.
Has your strategy on looking at the acquisitions and doing the underwriting process changed significantly in today's environment versus a few years ago?
Yeah, it definitely has. I think in 2021 and 2022, we had more varied loans. So we had floating, we had fixed, we kind of had a mix. And last year we did only fixed rate loans. So that's something that changed and varied. We're always going to find what the best loan is at that time. So I think that's what changed.
What about the assumptions going into the increase in rents and expenses? I know year over year so far, rents have maybe slowed down a bit as to what they were in early 2019, 2020, when rents were in the double digits. What are you guys looking for now?
Yeah. So one of the big things that we do now on a new acquisition is we look at the last 30 leases. So we look at what has been going on and if there has been positive rent growth, if it's been neutral, stable, or if there's been a decline in rent growth. So that helps us inform building our pro forma going forward for the next year if we're able to get that positive rent growth based on kind of the most recent leases. And then we also break that down into the next into the last 10 leases. And that kind of takes you through, you know, the beginning of 2024 until now. So you're able to see, okay, has it rebounded? Has it stable? Is it stayed stable or have rents fallen a bit? So we're keeping rent growth pretty flat throughout the entire whole period.
How about on the reserve sides or the risk mitigation? Because earlier on, you know, pre this strange period in real estate, you know, you could be maybe a little bit more aggressive in your assumptions and things like that. Now going forward, have you changed a little bit of the conservatism? Have you added like additional reserves or anything like that in your underwriting?
Yeah, thankfully we've kept that pretty much the same. We've always had 4 to 6 months of debt service payments in reserve, as well as like a healthy working capital reserve, just in case anything happens on the property. So that's been pretty stable. That's been something that was implemented a really long time ago and that has been successful. So we're continuing to do that.
How was it when you were looking to move into the Austin market as you were trying to break in? And you mentioned that you were able to close on the first property most recently as well. When you're looking to enter a new market like that or a different city, what's that process that you get into as you start to move into the new market?
Sure. So we first start off with just looking at deals. And this starts a year or two before we want to get into that new market. So we start looking at deals, we're gathering data, we're gathering intel, we're getting familiar with the locations, we're getting familiar with the specific submarkets, the high rent growth submarkets, the lower rent growth submarkets, where are the good areas with less crime, more crime, good school districts. So that kind of sets our parameters location-wise, because that's the first thing that we look at, is it in a good location? And then from there, you know, underwriting deals, you understand kind of what that market is doing also in terms of rent growth and expenses. How, like, for example, getting into Houston, you really have to get comfortable with that insurance expense growth, you know? So that's also something we did for Austin. And then because we have transacted so much in Houston and San Antonio, those brokers, if they're Central Texas, you know, they share a lot of the same brokers, but some of them have their own separate offices in Austin. So it's kind of having that broker introduce us to their guys in Austin or whatever new market we're going in. And they kind of give you, in a way, kind of they give you a recommendation to this broker, like, hey, I've transacted with them before, you know, they're real buyers, I've had a really great experience with them. So that these brokers can show us some acquisitions. And then it's a lot of submitting LOIs and then, you know, seeing what sticks. And that's kind of how we break into a market.
When you're looking at the pricing for these different opportunities that are out there, and when you conduct your own underwriting, how far typically off are the numbers from what you're looking at versus, you know, what the seller is asking for?
Yeah. So I think last year there was that huge bid ask gap, right? From what the seller wants to where the market is actually coming in. And I think that's narrowed a lot this year. And just the market will always inform where the price really is. So I think it's lowering, but I still think there's probably a, you know, 10 to 20% bid ask gap today.
So one of the things that you mentioned earlier, so when we're looking at an acquisition and you're putting in those offers, sometimes the price might be a little bit different than what the seller is looking for after you're doing your due diligence and your underwriting. But not only is the price point an important factor, but it's also the relationships that you've built with the brokers and the certainty of close based off of your reputation with the REAP and everything like that, that helps solidify the broker's confidence in you and bring deals to you with the surety of close and being able to operate the properties. Is there anything else that sets you guys apart that allows you to continue winning these deals as well?
I think when it comes down to like past the LOI, maybe into that best and final stage, and when you're completing that buyer questionnaire, it's kind of being really sure and really conservative and really accurate in your assumptions. So sellers are going to be looking at that. Did you underwrite, you know, what is market for a Fannie Mae loan, or is it completely off? What are your rent growth assumptions? You know, long gone are the days where you can underwrite 10, 15% rent growth. So that's something that kind of we hone in on that buyer questionnaire, is just really putting a lot of work and being thoughtful and being conservative and being accurate, so the seller knows that we are a real buyer.
So, Victoria, are you looking to continue to expand within the Texas markets, or what's next for you and REAP?
Yeah, so along with expanding in Austin and through the I-35 corridor between San Antonio and Austin, we are starting to look at Dallas. So we are looking in all Dallas-Fort Worth area. So hopefully we'll be able to crack into that market at the end of this year or next year.
So Victoria, how has real estate investing impacted your life?
Yeah, I think it's given me a lot, me and my husband, a lot of financial freedom. We've been able to expand his business through investing. We've been able to buy a house. We've been able to travel. And I think most importantly, we've been able to give to our charities of choice. So being able to financially give has been, you know, top of our mind and top of our heart.
One thing I think right before, I was just thinking about this question, right before we started recording, we talked about a little bit about working with family as well. And yeah. So sometimes people get into this business or any business at all, and they're like, oh, you shouldn't work with family. You know, there's some hesitations about it and things like that. They're causing maybe some arguments, or maybe you don't see eye to eye all the time. Mm-hmm. How are you looking at working with family and seeing how that dynamic works and continue to build that relationship and continue to grow, you know, as a family organization?
Yeah. So that's a great question, Eileen. And that's honestly the number one question that I get is how is working with your family? And honestly, I can say it's amazing. So my brother is also in the business. He's on the development side, the ground up development side that we're starting. So it's the four of us and his wife, who's also in our marketing department. So we get to work together all the time, which is amazing. I think a lot of our dinners, you know, on the weekends or in the evenings, also we talk about work. So that's really cool. But what I think is amazing is being able to have my parents as like role models and also mentors to be able to guide me through real estate, to be able to guide me, you know, through underwriting, through offers, through lender relationship, broker relationships, everything. So it's been great for my brother and I to be able to rely on them and lean on them and learn from them. And then, you know, I think we have a good boundary, right? We have a good personal work-life boundary, which I think is crucial when you're working with family.
Yeah. Working with family also could be a huge blessing too, because mm-hmm. they're the closest people to you, and who else can you trust, right? Is exactly. If not family. And so one of the things I heard from you as you were talking through is the communication was really important as well. And if the communication is broken down, the dynamics might not have worked as well, but because your parents' communication and their teaching styles and integrating you and your brother into the business have really allowed you to not only develop your own skill sets, but help the business grow as well.
Exactly. Exactly. That communication is key and the trust is there. So we just feel like we're just able to build together.
And Victoria, what is the one thing you know now about real estate that you wish knew when you first started?
I think I wish I knew that you didn't have to be a millionaire to invest in multifamily. I think that's a perception like we were talking about earlier, is what do you think, you know, some of the boundaries and some of the things that you think about investing is that you need a lot of money to invest. But in reality, you can invest your self-directed IRA. You can invest, you know, a smaller cash amount. So that's something that I wish I had known earlier.
And what is the one thing that sets the successful people apart in real estate investing?
I think keeping up with the market. I think it only takes 15 minutes a day, read a couple articles, stay on top of what's going on. And that will just set you apart from a lot of people who don't learn about it daily.
What are the maybe like the top two resources that you go on a daily basis that help you stay on top of what's going on in the market?
Ooh, let me think. JP Conklin from Pensford has a really great newsletter that he releases every week. So reading that, can't go wrong with the Wall Street Journal, Yahoo Finance, and then also just what I do and what we all do on the acquisitions team is just look at the treasuries every day, see what's going on, what's happening, keeping up with the Fed. JP Conklin also does a great job of breaking down whenever the Fed makes a decision, or they have some new inflation numbers come out. He does a really great job of breaking that down to make it really digestible.
So Victoria, where can my listeners find out more about you and what you're doing?
Yeah, they can go to www.reapequity.com.
Awesome. Victoria, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Eileen, for having me.
And thank you for listening to our podcast today, brought to you by Bonavest Capital. We would really appreciate it if you can go to iTunes right now and leave a rating and written review. Also, please don't forget to subscribe so you can always get the latest episodes. You can also connect with us on Facebook, How Did They Do It Real Estate. We'd love to hear your feedback and any topics that you're interested in for future episodes. If you're anything like Zayla and me and believe that real estate investing is a great way to create passive income and build long-term wealth, check out our free apartment syndication due diligence checklist for passive investors at bonavestcapital.com/checklist. Zayla and I created this checklist for ourselves as we evaluated different multifamily syndication opportunities as a passive investor. So we would love to share it with you so you can use it as a resource as well. Download your free copy today at bonavestcapital.com/checklist. Lastly, to learn more about us, you can go to bonavestcapital.com and fill out the contact us page so you can speak to us directly. Nothing on the show should be considered as specific personal advice. Please consult your legal, tax, and real estate professionals for individualized advice.